This is an audio archive edition of WINA's Charlottesville Right Now with Coy Barefoot, made available online by the Charlottesville Podcasting Network, cvillepodcast.com.
Raising Barbecue. Come out and hear why the abstinence message needs to be delivered in our schools and how you can help keep it there. Call 990-2060 to RSVP or go to worthyourweight.org. Please support our youth in this vital program. worthyourweight.org.
Yeah, Drifter, can you make folks cry when you play and sing? Have you paid your dues? Can you moan the blues? Can you bend them guitar strings? I said, boy, can you make folks feel what you feel inside? 'Cause if you're big star bound, let me warn you, it's a long, hard ride.
It's 38 minutes after 4 o'clock, 22 before 5. This is Charlottesville Right Now. It's News Radio 1070. WINA. I'm Coy Barefoot. 50 degrees. Can you believe it? It's only 50 degrees and it's raining. And this is definitely not my favorite weather, but my impatience will love this because I haven't watered them in a couple days. So they're going to dig it, the flowers. Hey, coming up at 5:08, we'll talk live in studio with Brian Ballow. He's a historian at the University of Virginia and one of the backstory history guys on NPR. He will join us to talk about mothering. A history of mothering in America in honor of the recent Mother's Day celebration. Anna Burks is a research librarian at the Thomas Jefferson Library at Monticello, and she joins me live in studio. How are you? It's good to see you.
Good to see you, too.
Thank you for being here. I appreciate you coming in. We want to talk about this mourning ring. Now, your blog of the library is at jeffersonlibrary.wordpress.com.
Yes.
It's one of my favorite blogs, and it's called A Summary View. The Jefferson Library, putting the blah, blah in blog since 2008. And you had a recent post titled A Puzzling Purchase. Tell us first where this started. You referred to the memorandum books. What is that?
Those are basically Jefferson's financial accounts, and it's a two-volume published set that is really, really heavily annotated. So it's just this wonderful source for every little thing that sort of went on in Jefferson's life. So I was in there looking for something else, of course, and found this little tiny thing. It was just a reference that when he was in Philadelphia in August of 1776, he bought a mourning ring.
And which is what exactly?
Well, it, you know, during, I guess they're actually, the tradition is centuries older than that, but, you know, they would have jewelry to sort of commemorate the lives of the dead. And so some of it, I think, especially into the Victorian era, got, you know, they would put hair and stuff into the actual jewelry.
Wow.
But we don't know what this one looked like, of course.
Well, I know I know from reading the history of UVA by the, 1830s, it was custom, if someone died, I remember reading some faculty resolutions when they lost a member of their faculty, they would all agree to wear like a black armband for a long time. It could be like months that you would wear this black armband.
Yeah. There's of course, a whole culture associated with mourning and everything. So,
In the late 18th century, this was common then to buy a ring.
Yeah, and from what I've read, a lot of times when people died, you know, they would put in their will provision for mourning rings for their family. They say, well, I'm going to give you a ring that you can use to mourn me with.
Interesting.
So
do we know, based on how he wrote this or how he entered this into his accounts, was he buying this for himself or somebody else?
Absolutely no idea. So I started looking at, who could this be for? And the only person that I could think that it was for his mother, who had died at the end of March of the same year.
Well,
was the only
so,
person that made
so
sense.
Not his children.
Right.
You write that the last child of he and his wife died in September 1775, so the year before.
So a couple, yeah.
The year before. And the next child wouldn't come along until the following year.
Right.
So it wasn't a child. No siblings or in-laws record a recent death, but his mother had just died a few months before.
Mm-hmm, yeah.
And why is this significant? I mean, there's just so little in the record about his mother, right?
That's true. And there's also one of the people who commented on the blog post said, well, you know, I've always heard that Jefferson had a strained relationship with his mother. And I've been sort of looking at this because it makes me curious. And actually, that was an idea that sort of came along in the 20th century. Certain biographers had really, I think one of them wrote that Jefferson had a quote unquote frigid relationship with his mother. And so they really were actually making a lot of assumptions based on not too much evidence.
I saw a lot of that in 20th century history, right?
Well, yeah.
Especially when it comes to Jefferson. I mean, there was just, you know, so much psychoanalysis and,
I think that, you know, when you're doing research, and I've sort of felt this temptation myself, you know, you see something and you form an idea about it, and you have to always sort of catch yourself and be like, well, you know, maybe that's not, you know, I'm letting my perceptions affect the way I'm thinking about this. So you always have to be very careful. But, you know, this is case in point, of course. I'm trying to sort of say, well, you know, we don't know for sure that this was for his mother. It's one theory, but
it would be. We do know he bought a mourning ring a few months after his mother died.
Yeah.
And this is what people did at the time.
Right.
So it would make a lot of sense to connect those dots.
It would, yeah. So
and it's fascinating though, because like we were saying, we're talking with Anna Burks, a research librarian at Thomas Jefferson's Monticello. It's so fascinating because there is so little out there about his mother. I mean, what do we know?
Not
next to nothing,
well,
right?
Well, you know, there are a few things. There are sort of dribs and drabs, but the notation that Jefferson made on his mother's death, he wrote in the memorandum books that I was talking about before. My mother died, and it's a very sort of straightforward notation. It sounds sort of cold to us.
It's like Albert Camus, and, you know, the opening of The Stranger. Yeah, my mother died. And,
yeah, you know. Yeah. And I think some people take that as sort of a lack of emotional attachment. And there was also, I think, a letter that he wrote to another relative saying, and it seemed very sort of not what you would expect someone to say when their mother died. He basically just said, well, you know, you'll have heard that my mother died and she basically had a stroke and died an hour or so later.
She died at Shadwell at the family home? Or was she down at Tuckahoe?
I think she was at Shadwell. And there's actually, and this is another one of those sort of tidbits that I come across, her gravestone is at Monticello. And the gravestone says she died at Monticello. But it turns out that the gravestone was actually replaced in the 19th century by the descendants. And so we think that claim that she actually died at Monticello was
a spurious claim. Yeah.
Well, that it was introduced later, that may not actually be quite accurate.
So she more than likely died at Shadwell, which was the where Jefferson.
Yeah, that seems
the family
more likely.
Home.
Yeah.
Which is down the hill, down closer to 250.
Right.
East.
Right.
We're talking with Anna Burks. The phone lines are open 977-1070. You have a question about Mr. Jefferson. This is definitely the person to ask. Certainly. It was also, I'm just thinking about the way that he entered this and the way that he talked in letters about his mother's death or even his mother in general. Doesn't this sort of fit, though, with his personality? I mean, he's not a guy that wears heart on his sleeve, is he?
Yeah, yeah. I think that, you know, we're looking for sort of much more emotional trappings on this. And, you know, he made a notation also years and years later when his brother died in the memorandum books. And it was almost exactly the same. It just said, you know, my brother died today. I heard that my brother died today. And that was, so I don't necessarily think that he would have been sort of emotionally profuse.
Yeah.
You
need look no further than the death of his wife, who he, you know, by all accounts, he adored. Just look at his reaction in the months after her passing and the witnesses from his daughters writing about him just, you know, going out every day on horseback and crying and just riding around.
Yeah.
There it is. I mean, it's certainly the man was capable of deep, deep love and emotion. He just didn't write about it a lot.
Right. And supposedly he burned all of his correspondence directly with his wife after she died. And so we don't know anything about their relationship. And I had read somewhere, I'm not quite sure where now, that there's evidence that he also burned correspondence with his mother. So just because he appears never to have written to her doesn't mean that they didn't have a close relationship. So
we're talking with Anna Burke. She's a research librarian at Thomas Jefferson's Monticello. More after this quick break. We'll be right back. We're talking with Anna Burke. She's a research librarian at Thomas Jefferson's Monticello. You can check out the blog of the research library online at jeffersonlibrary.wordpress.com. So tell me, What's your background? I mean, did you study history?
I didn't.
How do you fall into this job where you actually spend every day researching Jefferson and Monticello?
Well, I actually have an undergraduate degree in German. Seemed like a good idea at the time. I wanted to actually get a job, so I got a degree in library science. And this is my first job out of library school.
Wow. So, now, a degree in library science entails what? Like, you literally study how to study? I mean, how to do research and collect data?
It's sort of a meta subject, I guess, as they say. And that's why a lot of librarians, you don't necessarily need to have the background in the subject area. You need to know how to find information within the literature, basically. So, although a lot of librarians do get secondary degrees like that. So it's a master's degree.
Yeah, that's great.
Most librarians have them.
What do you, day to day, what do you actually do at the Jefferson Library? I mean, you must field a ton of requests from folks calling
in.
Oh, yes.
And in a lot of ways, that's one of the most fun parts of my job. But we only have 3 staff members, so we all do a little bit of everything. So I do answer reference questions, and I deal with people, of course, who come through the door and want to use the library. I also buy books for the library. I do a little bit of stuff with the website, and I also manage the Thomas Jefferson Encyclopedia, which is one of many actually digital projects that Monticello has going. So, and then, you know, I do all sorts of other things that come up, you know, copier jams. And,
so what's whatever. The strangest request you've gotten? When somebody calling into the Jefferson Library. Like, well, it doesn't have to be strange. I mean, one that just really sticks out in your mind. Like, well, I'll never forget that question.
Well, yeah. And strange is as strange does, I suppose. One of the recent ones that we got that was a little bit out of the ordinary was there was a comedian who contacted us who was writing an article for the website McSweeney's.
Sure,
I don't know if
yeah.
you're familiar with
oh,
it.
Oh, yeah, very much
and
so.
And he asked me, he said he needed to find out what Jefferson smelled like. And because he was writing an article about how the president smelled. And so, you know, at first you have this like, what? Really? And then you sort of like, okay, all right, that's a fair question. So I researched it.
Yeah, are there any references in the historical record to Jefferson's smell? Interesting.
I didn't find anything about Jefferson's smell per se, although there was a great quote from John Adams actually about being in, you know, some sort of public house or someone's house and being able to smell someone from a room away, and that apparently was unacceptable. So that is a little bit indicative that was to him that was just not right.
Yeah.
But as far as Jefferson, you know, I really sort of had to get into, you know, what were the sort of bathing habits and philosophies of the time.
And so what were his bathing habits?
Well, apparently it was more common, you know, you didn't take a full bath like every day, but you would sort of wash your hands and your face. And
he soaked his feet, didn't he, in like cold water?
He did,
or something?
Yeah, yeah. But you wouldn't necessarily wash your whole body every day. So, you know, I'm guessing that, you know, if you were to travel back in time, you would notice that, you know, someone
people would smell a little bit
more,
a little bit
probably,
more pungent.
Yeah. But then there was a line there apparently where polite society just, you know, that
interesting.
That was too much for them.
We're talking with Anna Burks of Monticello. And share with me if you can, we have a few minutes left. Share with me if you can, one or two things about him that you think most people don't know that you have dug up through your research and the library has come up with. What was he like? I mean, anything that comes to mind?
Oh, gosh. I might need a prompt there because there's just so much.
Well, I do know that there's some accounts of people dining with him who've said that, you know, he wasn't the most outgoing guy in the world, that he could be a little cold. In his just personality with people. And yet then you see him with, you know, Maria Causeway in Paris, and he was probably anything but cold with her.
Yeah, well, and there were so many people who came to visit Jefferson, and you just never know what they were expecting to find versus what, you know, they did encounter and maybe, you know, what were their sort of motivations and
that's a good point. Yeah,
know, what you know
what were their expectations might have
yeah,
informed
yeah,
their view of him.
So there is a story, and I don't know if Jeff Looney already told you this one. There's something about someone who came to visit Jefferson, and there was a guy who was sitting and waiting with him in the entrance hall, and so they eventually were invited in to have dinner with Jefferson, and you know, the evening sort of came to a close, and they all said goodbye, and this one gentleman said to Jefferson, "Who was that guy?" And Jefferson was like, "I don't know. I thought he was with you."
And he spent the whole evening dining with him.
Yeah, you know,
they didn't really know who he was.
Yeah, there was just so many people coming to call that, you know, that was not unusual to have strangers.
Yeah, and that was very common.
Sort of accepted.
Certainly after he retired as president and came home, and here was for like another 15 years just in Charlottesville.
Oh, yeah.
Very common for people just to stop by unannounced.
Yeah. And there was, I don't know, this isn't really about Jefferson per se, but there was one of our staff members a few years ago was looking at the roof tiles on the dome. Have you heard this one?
No.
There was graffiti on them when they took them off to conserve them. And people had written their names on the roof tiles and dates.
Wow.
And what they found was that a lot of these people were students at UVA who had come up to Monticello, crawled up on top of the dome and written their names.
Oh my gosh.
And like, you know, a heart with an arrow and their sweetheart. You know, I mean, it's just like, I think it's interesting because it's kind of like, wow, you know, times just never change almost, or people don't change.
An undiscovered UVA student tradition, yeah.
Exactly, yeah. And there were, you know, they did research on the names that were written on the roof tiles and looked at, you know, the student registration records. And they did actually find that some of the students had been there during the dispersal sale in 1827 that... you know, in which a lot of Jefferson's belongings were sold. So they had been there, and I don't know if they sort of hung around until, you know, after everyone had gone and sort of crept up to the roof and left their mark on the place.
But, wow. You know, it's really something. Sure. Before we let you go, anything interesting going on? I mean, there's always something interesting going on up at Monticello. What's the latest?
Well, there is a lot of stuff coming down in June. There are already a few things that have come along. The dining room has been painted. So
the yellow walls are up and ready for view.
Yes, they are really yellow. It's quite something to see.
And for folks who don't know, this was, you know, the conservators believe that the walls of the dining room, we've gotten used to that sort of old Virginia blue, but in fact, they believe that they were a very bold yellow that would have brightened the room in the wintertime.
Yeah, I've heard people call it egg yolk yellow. That's fairly apt. so there is that, and they're doing more stuff to the dining room as well. There's a new exhibit opening in the dependencies right underneath the house called Crossroads, I believe. And I think that there is going to be a working model of the wine dumbwaiter that people can actually try out for themselves.
Cool.
They are going to be offering tours up into the upper part of the house, you know, just... I think it's twice a day.
Yeah.
They'll be offering tours. So now you can.
So that used to be a bit of a rare thing, but now you're going to, there'll be a lot more access.
Yeah.
That's exciting.
Yeah. So a lot of stuff coming along.
Yeah. Very good stuff. And there's always good stuff. And if you have not seen the new visitor center, shame on you. Get over there and see it. It is stunning and definitely worth a visit. Anna Burke, she's a research librarian at Thomas Jefferson's Monticello. Thank you so much for being here.
You're welcome.
You've been listening to Charlottesville Right Now with Coy Barefoot. Charlottesville Right Now is broadcast live Monday through Friday on News Radio 1070 WINA from 4 to 6 p.m. Best-selling author and historian Coy Barefoot is the host and producer. To interact with Coy and his guests, you can call 434-977-1070. Coy can be reached at barefoot@wina.com. This audio download has been made possible by the Charlottesville Podcasting Network. Visit SeavillePodcast.com for more.